Oh, we back for another one, right? Bags are packed. Hey, Tommy, you ready?
Let's go.
We going in. Hey. It's the night before the cruising. If I'm honest, I ain't sleeping. But even if I could, I'd be dreaming about this weekend. All the fun we about to have as we taking this vacation. Always be booked on our way to embarkation, cause we know what's in store. Pockets and palm trees, tropical sea breeze and frozen daiquiris. Oh please, thank you sir, yes I think I'll have another. Please don't blow my cover, cause I'm passing on the muster. Bring a lover, bring a friend, bring someone you just met. It ain't snowing where we going and the good times never end. Here's the 5 more years, drinking beers, running peers. Thanks for giving us your ears through the laughter and the tears. But we just getting started out here, give us a holler. If you're looking, you can find us somewhere south of the Bahamas. Getting hotter as we go, cones and we united. So sound that horn, cause everybody's invited.
All aboard and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We are back, another Thursday conversation. This time, very special guest, we have the esteemed Gary Bembridge with Tips for Travelers on YouTube with us today. Gary, how are you, man?
Hi, very good. Thanks, Tommy. And you?
Good, good. Thanks for coming on board and doing this with us. And, you know, you have your reputation precedes yourself. You have a very, very big outreach out there, so we're really happy to have you on, man. Thank you.
Great. No, thank you. It's always fun to talk cruising, so
yeah. Exactly. I'm in the same boat, no pun intended, where, you know, you don't have to twist my arm to talk about some cruising.
Exactly.
I will say, though, it's kind of crazy because you and myself are very much on probably on the far reaching ends of the spectrum when it comes to cruising. I am on the you know, the American stuff your face drinking side of it, and you you know, you have a pretty refined approach and you cast a wide net when it comes to your audience and I guess the types of cruises that you've been on. But either way, we're all uniquely attached to cruising. So I guess my first question to you would be, when did you know you were all in and you were in love with cruising and it's something that you want to, A, do for the rest of your life, but also, I guess, enter into the content creating side of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting. I mean, I probably was like so many people. I mean, still people I talk to today, and I'm sure you talk to today, which is I was always of the view kind of cruising is not for me. Why on earth would I want to go on a cruise? And my first cruise I ever went on was sort of like by accident. It wasn't really by design. I was asked to go and talk on a cruise. It was like a chartered cruise. They were doing a marketing conference. That was what my full-time job was. And so I thought, yeah, I'll go and do that. Could be fun. And that was ages ago. That was back in 2004. And literally, as we set sail out of Southampton, it was out of the UK, out of Southampton, it was like I realized and started to get what, you know, why people were so excited about cruising. You know, I was like amazed at the ship, like all the stuff that was on the ship and, you know, the facilities, the dining, the entertainment, and also just, you know, heading out to sea and, you know, sunset at sea. And I thought, right, this is something, I get the whole point of it. So I came back from that and I said to my partner, right, we're going to try cruising. And then from then on, it sort of became almost the default choice, as it were. And I'd started about the same time, no, a couple of years later, not about the same time, about 2006 was when YouTube started. And at the time I was, because I traveled a lot for my job as well, I had a global marketing job, and I'd started posting, you know, when podcasts started, I started doing a podcast. And then when YouTube came, I just started throwing stuff on YouTube, literally. So it was mostly hotel rooms I was staying at. Started, you know, posting a few bits of cruises I was going on. And I really enjoyed doing that. I found I really enjoyed that. And I realized when I was going on trips, I would always sort of do the video first. Although when I look back at the videos, they're pretty horrific. But, you know, I'd always do the videos first. And I thought, well, actually, I really like, you know, I like that. So the more cruising I did, you know, I realized more and more people were watching the cruising videos. So I started doing more cruising videos. Then I'd always decided, quite young, I'd always decided that when I was 55, I was always going to retire. And my idea was, you know, I'd do some marketing consultancy, I'd do a bit more traveling. And then when I did retire, I started really focusing on YouTube. I really sort of doubled down on it and thought, I'm really going to focus a lot on, you know, who's the audience, what am I trying to do with it, what's my point of difference, et cetera, et cetera. And then it just took off from there. And then because that took off, it meant I could just cruise so much more, because basically pretty much everything I own on YouTube, I use to go cruising. Well, the tax man obviously takes their slug, but other than that, I pretty much use it to cruise. So it's sort of, it was sort of like by accident, by design, by accident, kind of, and it just sort of got me to where I am today, which is fun.
Oh, definitely. And I did miss it. What did you say? What kind of line of work were you in prior to your cruising?
Yes. Yeah, so Tommy, my background is marketing. So I used to work for Johnson & Johnson. I guess many people know Johnson & Johnson. So I had like a global marketing job. I was the VP of marketing for Johnson's Baby, which many people know. So yeah, I look after a lot of the marketing and the product development stuff for Johnson's around the world. So, so also the YouTube thing was quite a nice break, because I had this sort of like big corporate job. But then I also had my little side hustle, which was, you know, going cruising and making videos.
Right, like a welcome escape, but still being productive exactly. At the same time.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, and I think what you said resonates with a lot of YouTubers. I'm mostly a podcast. I've delved into YouTube fairly recently a little bit more, but the common denominator that most people say, interestingly, is that they're always horrified by their first few videos. As a new YouTuber and as somebody kind of getting going with it, I shouldn't be discouraged, because it is a little, when you do look at your body of work and you kind of know what you're doing and the rhythm that you're in now, you would say it's a far cry from your first, I would you say, 10, 20 videos?
Oh, yeah, it's dramatically different. I mean, it's, you know, obviously technology changes and it becomes easier to shoot good quality video, but it's also around understanding, I think, what it is that you need to do to make a video that people want to watch. So I think the mistake that the mistake a lot of people make, I think, on YouTube is they make videos for themselves, which is fine, unless you want lots of people to watch them, if you know what I mean. So, you know, I think what I realized is I shifted from just sort of making something that I hoped people would watch to think about, what do people want to watch? What is the value that I'm adding? What am I bringing that's different? Why should people invest their time with me? And that was the big kind of change, I think. So I go back and look at the videos, and not only were they shot really badly, you know, because, you know, they were all just horrible panning shots flying all over the place. Also, there wasn't much personality in there. There wasn't kind of much of me in there. It was all just showing stuff rather than having an opinion. So it's a combination of technical skills, but also really focusing on kind of what is it that, you know, why should people watch you? And I think, you know, particularly in the cruising space, there are a lot of channels. You know, I have a list of channels I sort of update, you know, new channels and stuff, and I think it's way over 200. But every time I post a list, you know, another 40 or 50 or whatever come out the woodwork. And, you know, when you look at the channels, so many are so similar. You know, where people do vlogging, here's me on a trip. And it's a real thing about thinking about, you know, who are you talking to? Why are you talking to them? Why would they want to watch you versus somebody else? You know, what I always think when I go on a trip, for example, is, you know, imagine all 200 of those, because sometimes there are loads of, you know, all going on the same trip. What are you going to do that's different to everybody else? That's interesting and different. That's what I sort of use. So, you know, when I look back, my videos constantly evolve and change based on what people are watching, what people are interested in. You know, as people, you know, a lot of people sort of will do the same thing as other people, or people do similar things that I'm doing. Like, what can I do that's different now? So, you know, it's constantly evolving, constantly changing.
No, I would say that sounds like pretty good advice, you know, especially with it being crazy and having all those people in the space. Now, did you see a particular time where there was a little bit of a boom? Was it a pandemic thing? Where, because you mentioned you operate that list of over 200 or around 200. Is there a particular time when you saw everybody kind of rushing to jump into the space?
That's quite interesting. I mean, post pandemic, there have definitely been a lot of people, as people have sort of returned to cruising or started cruising, so since sort of shutdown ended, there's definitely been a real explosion of of people doing it. And I guess maybe that's because during the pandemic, a lot of people were watching a lot of YouTube. I mean, people weren't watching travel. I mean, my channel went from, like, it plummeted like 90%, literally. And if I look at, you know, my January 2020, my February 2020, and then March 2020, it literally, like, views plummeted by 90%. Wow. And stayed for that for most of 2020. And most people have traveled there, you know, because the YouTube algorithm is very sensitive to what people are watching. And of course, people weren't watching travel. They want more entertainment or whatever. A few people started experimenting a little bit during the pandemic, but it's really, I've seen a lot of new channels. When I look at that list, you know, a lot of people contact me. They've literally, you know, if you look at what they've done, a lot of it is really post kind of, you know, sort of 2021, 2022 and onwards. So I think that's been a big driver, you know, people watching it, seeing. And also, I think, you know, if I look at, you know, sort of my growth, it was, you know, I was growing a lot heading into the pandemic, you know, that kind of, it sort of shuddered to a stop. But certainly post-pandemic, post-shutdown, it's grown a lot because there's also a lot of new people coming into cruising. So a lot of people are looking for information, I think. So, you know, I'm seeing a lot of kind of new to cruise or people, you know, thinking about trying different cruise lines. So I think that's fueling a lot of it as well.
Sure, sure. Now, I talk a lot about on my show, and I've kind of coined this term. It's PCB. It stands for Pure Cruise Bliss. It's that time during your cruise when you're out there. Listen, I'm on a cruise. I'm pretty much having a good time, no matter where I am, no matter what I'm doing. But within that, there are these few moments where, whatever it is, the position of the sun, whether it's the right song, the right place, the right area within the ship, where I find what I call pure cruise bliss. This is where the cruise is really hitting its stride as, you know, complete level of bliss has taken over. And I remember I'm in the moment and I'm saying to myself, this is why I cruise. Under what circumstances do you usually find your pure cruise bliss?
I think probably it's that sort of the that 45 minutes hour as you're coming into port, wherever it is, you know, whether port, whether it's a port I've never been to, or a port I've been to before. It's that sense of, you know, as you're sailing in, heading towards your kind of the next adventure, the next place to explore. Because that's what I find. I mean, I obviously love being on ships, and I love the experience of being on ships. But it's going to new places, like seeing new things. You know, if it's even, you know, it's a port going back to, knowing it's a different excursion I'm doing. That's for me, is that when I feel like just the magic,
right?
And the close second is, you know, that sort of in the evening, particularly after a meal or show, just being out on deck, you know, quietly sailing through the ocean. You know, it's really quiet. You go up in the top deck or whatever. And even though, you know, there's loads of people on the ship, it's just a sense of calm and quietness out on deck because everyone's inside doing their thing. That's the other one. It's that just sense of really calm as well. So it's those two that for me are the two.
Oh, totally. I get that. You know, you're first and foremost when you, you know, especially when you've been at sea maybe a couple of days and, you know, you get that first spot of land. Some of the ports are, I guess, a little bit more picturesque to travel into than others. But either way, yeah, when you kind of see that, and you see where you're going and you know what's ahead of you, I totally get that feeling. But I can certainly appreciate that. All right. So as an influencer, as we said before, you do have a very large audience and you offer a lot of good information. My audience is by far mostly American. And I guess I would ask you on their behalf, are there any general things that Americans should know about cruising specifically out of Europe?
I mean, it's just most of my audience is American, so probably 80% of my audience North American based. So, and mostly in the US, Canada is probably about 10% of my audience, but probably 70-odd% is US, United States based.
Right.
I think in terms of selling out of Europe, I mean, I think probably what I see some people from the US probably underestimate is just how different and varied, you know, it is moving between the different countries of Europe. Because, you know, obviously I guess there's always an expectation between the EU and stuff, you know, Europe is Europe, you know, like the United States is the United States. And, you know, people coming into the United States think of the US as one kind of thing. And of course, once you go to the US, you realize it's not. There's very different states and different cultural things. But just how different and varied, you know, culturally and just the way things are done in the different European countries. I think people often underestimate just how varied it is. And on the plus side, it is the realization, you know, that you can see that in a 1 week. You know, so if you're doing a classic kind of Mediterranean cruise, for example, out of, you know, Rome or Barcelona or whatever, you're literally going to four, five, six countries in the space of 1 week. And you can just, you know, see that huge diversity. I think that's the one thing. The other thing that probably people actually underestimate, which is just a very practical one, is that in Europe, many of the best sites, even though they're billed as being, you know, you might have Rome or you might have Florence on your itinerary, they're a very, very long way from the ports. And I think people, you know, particularly if you're coming from the US and you're including the Caribbean, you know, you kind of head off the ship and you're there and stuff's all there, you know, the attractions, the beaches, whatever. But a lot of the ports in Europe are quite far away. Sorry, a lot of the key sites are quite far away from the ports. And some of the people kind of underestimate that, particularly if they're people who normally like to self-explore, just realizing it's quite complicated getting from Civitavecchia to Rome or, you know, from Ravenna into Venice or whatever. So that's probably like a practical thing.
That's good stuff. So two takeaways right there that I just got are, A, if you're cruising into Europe and you're getting on a sailing, you're going to cover a lot of ground. You're going to cover a lot of countries. But please don't think, even though it's on the same itinerary, that you are going to have the same experience at each port of call. And then the second one, great as well, realizing and preparing for a little bit of a trip, more so than you might be used to if you're sailing to the Caribbean, as far as getting to your specific excursion. That's good. That's good stuff. So I noticed you cruise across many different cruise lines, but also many different categories. Can you tell us what types of, I guess maybe, or if some of the luxuries that they may advertise on some of the ultra lux categories of cruise ships, what can we expect? And would you say that it's worth the, I guess, the higher price points that they charge for it?
I mean, I get asked that a lot, and it's quite a difficult. I mean, I think if you're the sort of person who has the budget to cruise, say, in a suite on whatever line it is, whether it's Carnival or Norwegian or Caribbean, Princess, whatever it is, if you're the sort of person who likes, you know, who has the budget or wants to treat yourself to cruise in a suite, then I would say absolutely looking at an ultra-luxury line is worth it, because in reality, what you'll find is if you then, you know, tot up, add up everything that's going to cost, you know, the cost of your suite, your excursions, your drinks package, your gratuities, etc., an ultra-luxury cruise line or even some of those small luxury lines like Oceania are probably going to cost you the same as they would. So a lot of people thinking, right, I'm going to go on my Royal Caribbean in a suite and it's going to be better value. Actually, it may not be. I mean, you might want to go on it because you want, you know, the big ship experience and the big shows and the, you know, the ice skating rink and whatever. But if you really, you know, from a dollar-to-dollar point of view, ultra-luxury will cost you the same. And then I think it is all about if you want sort of the intimacy. So if you actually want a much smaller experience, fewer people, you know, literally everybody in the crew knows who you are, many of the passengers know you. It's a very kind of more intimate, personalized, very personalized experience. Everyone remembers what you want. That's, you know, it's you kind of lose a lot of the anonymity that you have on a bigger ship. So I think it is. I think the other thing that is a big plus, which is a small ship plus, and it also applies probably more so in places like Europe, possibly in parts of Asia, for example, is it does take you into different ports. It takes you a little, you know, if you're going on a bigger ship in Europe, you're very limited on ports you can get into. I mean, still some of the great ports, but if you're heading into, I don't know, say Marseille, if you're on a big ship, you're right out in the container port. If you're on a small ship or a luxury ship, you're right in the heart of Marseille. You literally step off and you're in the middle of the city. You know, so it's also, you know, depends a little bit on kind of the regional side as well. I mean, I always, But you know, you're never going to, if you're the sort of person who, you know, from a budget perspective, or just, you know, you don't want to spend that money on a vacation, you would, I think you'll just feel, oh my God, I'm wasting so much money on luxury, because it's really expensive. It's crazy expensive. I go in there because, I mean, they're obviously great to go on, but I go in them a lot because I can write, you know, make videos about them and talk about them. But I always think, oh my God, I could go on two cruises or three cruises.
Yeah, sometimes more.
It's sometimes more. I know, absolutely, depending on your greater cabin. So I think it's, but if you're in that sort of, if you're the sort of person that cruises in suites, then I think it's a very different discussion. But you're never going to feel good, I think, if you're sort of even wrestling with thinking, I'm not even sure if a balcony is worth it, you would go crazy on an ultra luxury thing. Oh my God, I've literally spent in one day, I could have gone on, what I spent in one day, I can go on a whole cruise.
Right. You just, you know, just measuring value, what you hold, I guess, is in high priority. And, you know, if you're finding an inside cabin, and it would probably kill you to, you know, I guess, you know, sometimes it gets the area of $3,000 to $5,000 a person sometimes. So in that regard, you'd want to just multiply the amount of cruises you could go on in a particular year, right?
Exactly. And so a lot of it obviously hinges on, exactly as you said, it hinges on what's important to you. You know, would you rather go on one cruise and be pampered to, like, you've never ever dreamed of being pampered and eaten food like you've never dreamed, you've eaten an ordered off menu, or would you rather go on five, six, whatever cruises? And, you know, it's about what's important to you, what do you value, I guess, is the key. And unless you have the money to do it, and then you don't, I guess you don't even notice that you're spending that kind of money.
Right. Okay, so stepping away from ultralux and heading back into, let's call it, the mass market or the premium lines, either one, mm-hmm. You know, there's three, I guess there would be, like, of course, there's many reasons why people sail. Three of the most popular, I would say, are service, food, and entertainment. And would you be able to, again, service, food, and entertainment, maybe reel off your favorite line or two? And I know I'm kind of catching you off guard here. We didn't prep you on this. I do apologize. But just in general, just your general first thoughts about which lines deliver most when it comes to those three categories.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the way I always look at it, because I get asked this quite a lot, is for me, a lot of it hinges around where I'm going and who I'm going with. And so that the equation kind of changes a lot based on those two factors.
True.
So because for me, the destination is really, really important. So even if I'm looking at the Caribbean, I'm still looking at which islands in the Caribbean rather than, you know, the Caribbean as such. So for me, I find, for example, if I look at the premium lines, I'll talk about the premium lines and then maybe talk more mass lines. You know, when I look at sort of Holland America, Celebrity, Princess, Cunard, I guess Disney's in that group as well. You know, I tend to gravitate a little bit towards Holland America of those ones, partly because from a value perspective, from a price perspective versus, say, Celebrity, they're normally a little bit sharper pricing, but Holland America does have incredible itineraries and has really, really good destination immersion. So that's really important. They have good service. They have happy ships. I always look at, like, they have happy ships. They have good food. They've kind of upped their food a lot. Where they fall down, though, is entertainment. You know, if you're into music, they're great because they have the music walk. So if you're really into music, they're great. But if you're into the production shows, they're terrible. The production shows, they just have the one-step dance company and they're all kind of the same. For me, of the premium lines, they're the ones I really like. But if I'm talking to people who perhaps are, you know, a little bit younger or like a little bit more of a party atmosphere or more kind of a show, I steer them more towards Celebrity, because Celebrity is just a bit more, it's a bit more lively, if you like, and their shows are more energetic and stuff. When it comes to the big, you know, the big beasts, if you like, the ones that the most, you know, the biggest lines, you know, so your Carnival, Royal Caribbean, Norwegian, MSC, the two that I sort of gravitate towards, I really like Norwegian, and I'm actually booked myself a series of going back on Royal Caribbean. I feel like I've been a bit down on Royal Caribbean recently, but and I haven't really been on there some of the really, you know, the big new ships. But I do like the Norwegian approach. I like their ships. I like the kind of the freestyle dining. I love the big production show. You know, you're going to see the sort of Broadway show, the full Broadway show, and the choice. I like just the huge choice of it all. So I sort of gravitate towards them. MSC, I don't know if you've done many MSC. MSC, I kind of went off. I'm actually going back on MSC because I feel like I need to give MSC another chance. But I felt like the service and the food on MSC is, of those, is probably the weakest, or has historically been the last couple of years.
Yeah, they still seem to be trying to find their way when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah, and I feel it's partly because they've just expanded so fast, and you know, they've pumped up so many ships so quickly. It's just, I feel like it's just hard, you know, just been hard to kind of, you know, keep up and keep.
Yeah, I feel like their hardware is second to none. Like their ships that they've come out with, the ships that they've built, Seaside and beyond. Their ships are absolutely gorgeous. But I do feel like you're right, and I feel like on, you know, an MSC cruise, you're gonna have to kind of bring your own fun. You know, again, cruising mostly 95% mass market out of America. You know, they have those big long lists of things to do and the itineraries and the schedules, whether it's the, you know, all those cruise planners. You're never like looking around for something to do. On MSC, I think it's a little bit more of an approach where, you know what, we built these beautiful ships. Could figure it out. Find something to do. You know what I mean? They don't necessarily, you know, attack you with that list.
I think that's right. I guess also it's because, you know, particularly when they're sailing, you know, particularly in Europe and stuff in their home territory, you know, because they have so many nationalities on board, I guess they've sort of, that's why they also, I think, probably do a little bit of that, because they've got six or seven nationalities on board. So to replicate everything six or seven times, they don't really do it as much. And I guess when they're selling out of North America, they probably haven't quite grasped that enough yet.
Yep. Makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. We're still talking to Gary Bembridge from Tips for Travelers. Gary, if it's okay, I got just a couple more for you. You good?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Great. If an American has mostly done Caribbean or Alaska, Mexican Riviera itineraries, but they want to try a European itinerary, is there a must-do port of call or a must-do, let's just call it chain of itinerary, a chain of islands, or not islands, destinations that they must do? Is there a go-to European itinerary that you would recommend for a first-timer over that way?
Yeah. For a first time, someone coming to Europe for the first time, I would strongly suggest doing a Western Mediterranean, which is, you know, which normally will go out of Barcelona, which is the kind of the biggest cruise port within Europe, or will go out of Civecchia, I always pronounce it correctly, which is near Rome. And the reason I would say that is because you're going to get to tick off you're some of the most iconic cities in the world. So if you go in that turn, you go to Barcelona, which is incredible. You go to, say, Livorno or one of the other ports near, which gets you to see Florence and Pisa. You'll probably stop somewhere in, you know, so you might go to Monte Carlo or Nice. You'll also get a chance to go into Rome, whether you've embarked from there or not. So you go and see Rome. So you get to see some of like the famous kind of must-see iconic places of all. That's probably the one I always recommend. For me, the more interesting itinerary, but it's one that I would probably have, as if you're coming back again, is the one which is the Adriatic, which is between Venice and Athens. You know, so unfortunately, you don't really sail out of Venice anymore, so the ports are quite far away, Trieste or Ravenna now, because you can't sail out of Venice. But you do Venice and you'll see parts of Croatia, you know, Dubrovnik. You will then also get to see some of the beautiful Greek islands. You know, you go to famous places like Santorini, you know, might go to Rhodes or Corfu or, you know, those sort of places. So it's a real, you get to see a lot of kind of ancient sites, if you like, but you also get incredible beaches and incredible weather. And that's sort of the second one. That's probably my favorite itinerary of all. But I always say to people, the first one is, you know, you want to go to that first one because you're going to do those absolute places, you know, you've read about, seen about, heard about. It's kind of the bragging rights one, I guess.
Right.
And the other advantage of that, coming back to the discussion we're having about lions, is, you know, pretty much every single lion will move ships out of the Caribbean. You know, they send some to Alaska, but they send the bulk of them into the Mediterranean. So whether you're a budget traveler and you're looking for, a sharply priced, I don't know, Carnival cruise, or you want to go on a Seabourn, or, you know, whatever grade or type of experience you want, if you want a party, you know, you're going to find that within that itinerary. So you can, you know, you don't have to compromise. If you love, you know, if you love the full energy Carnival experience, you can do that. If you want a really quiet, enrichment, you can do it on Cunard. You know, every kind of permutation you'll find on that itinerary. So that's another big plus as well. So, you can go feeling a little bit familiar, if you like. So if you really, you know, if you love a particular line, you'll find they do that itinerary. So you could, you know, that part's familiar. So you're taking risk on that side.
Sure. One of the big hot topics between, the North American side of things and the European side of things, people are always discussing the level of formality that is to be expected on cruising when cruising over that way. Can you speak to that a little bit? Is it as drastic on certain lines as some people make it seem to be? Do you really have to, be in a suit going to breakfast or brunch on some of these cruise lines, or are there some that are more formal than others?
Whatever the dress that you find when you're sailing in the Caribbean on whatever line you're sailing will be exactly the same in Europe. So, if you're going on Norwegian and whatever you wear in the evening or whatever in Norwegian in the Caribbean, you can wear exactly the same.
Okay.
To Europe. The key difference, though, which is what I think where the discussion sort of comes from, or the sort of the myth in where it comes from, is, you know, there are a couple of UK sort of home-based lines, if you like, or lines which are very heavily linked to the UK, like Cunard, for example, or Fred Olsen, though it's actually a Norwegian line, but all their sailings out of the UK, or Saga, which actually only British residents could book anyway. Those lines do have the very traditional dress codes still, although they are, you know, lower. So if you were to book a Cunard cruise, for example, in the Mediterranean, you know, they have formal nights where you are expected to wear on formal nights a jacket and tie to get into the main dining room, and many people will wear, you know, black tie. It's not as strict as it used to be, but if you were to go on Cunard in the Caribbean, which they don't go very often, but you'd have to do the same. So the good news is, you know, so if you've got a line that you're very comfortable with dress code wise, if you stick to that line, you can pack whatever you normally pack, dress whatever you wear whatever you normally wear, because it'll be just as fine. The one thing I would say in all my travels, I've actually found that Alaska is actually where the dress codes seem to be the least followed, if you know what I mean. I don't know what it is. Like, I found even when I've been on, say, my last Alaska cruise was Princess, which are, if you normally cruise anywhere else in the world in Princess, you know, the dress code is, it's not massively strict, but people dress a little bit more up for it. In Alaska, they seem to just completely not do that. And I figured it out. It was because there's more limited choice in Alaska. I mean, there's a lot of choice in Alaska, but it is more limited, that people choose a line for the timing and, the price and the itinerary. And they kind of don't worry too much about the dress code, and the line doesn't seem to push it that much. It doesn't seem to follow it that much. Whereas, you know, in the Caribbean or in Europe, they would sort of encourage people to follow their dress code a little bit more.
Okay.
So, but basically, yeah.
That makes sense. So you're saying basically it's consistent across lines that you're familiar with, and it doesn't necessarily change with the region that you're going to.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. That's helpful. So what do you, as far as like we mentioned before, Gary Bembridge from Tips for Travelers, that is the YouTube channel. You do have a vlog too. What is next? Are you kind of humming along the way you want to and doing your thing and kind of just going to be what it's going to be? Or are there other, I guess, is the channel looking to evolve? Are you going to make any changes? Do you have any goals for your particular, I guess, operation that as a whole, that is Tips for Travelers?
Oh, that's a good question. My main focus with the channel is filling the gaps. So where I feel that I have gaps, whether it's new lines coming along or new destinations that I haven't covered or lines that I haven't covered for a while. So for me, when I decide what I'm going to do cruise wise and content wise, it's constantly around filling gaps, which of course in cruising is constantly happening. It's new lines coming along or new ships coming along. So what I tend to do, what I'm doing this year a little bit, is I'm focusing on kind of destinations a little bit more. So this year I'm really focusing on getting to places that I haven't been or haven't covered on the channel. So like my next trip is actually a Nile River cruise. And then I'm doing Japan, I'm doing French Polynesia. So it's very focused on that. Then heading into next year, I'm shifting back into very much on what lines have I not been on or what lines have I not covered for a while. So like I mentioned earlier, I haven't been on the really, really big Royal Caribbean, the most recent Royal Caribbean ship. So it's filling those, trying the new Norwegian Prima class, trying some of the, the MSC spin-off Explorer Journeys and stuff. So that's what I do, is kind of looking at where the gaps are, what should I really be focusing, which is the one thing. And the other thing is experimenting a lot with, YouTube are always evolving. So it's experimenting with the format of the videos, but also leaning a lot more into shorts and short form. I haven't done a lot of short form content. But obviously with the growth of TikTok, Instagram Reels, YouTube are leaning very heavily into shorts. So I'm going to experiment with that much more, see where that takes me. The one thing I've learned with YouTube is if YouTube ever do anything, they go all in. And if YouTube ever start showing you data on something, you need to do it if you want to keep succeeding on YouTube. And it's very clear shorts is a big priority for them. So keep doing my lives, filling gaps and focusing on shorts is the sort of thing.
Yeah, I noticed that's pretty good advice for content creators, right? If you see that a particular platform is pushing a new type of initiative or a new type of way to communicate, a good idea, a good practice is to jump all over that, because chances are it's gonna be favorable for you in the algorithm, right?
Absolutely. And I think also the other thing that I always say to people is I'm lucky. I love data. So I've always loved data. That's probably my sort of marketing background. But what I always do with YouTube, and I always say to people, if you're on YouTube, is if you look at, YouTube Studio, whether it's on your phone, on the app, or on your desktop, is look anytime YouTube starts showing something new. So, for example, a couple of years ago, they started showing watch time data, both in absolute terms and in percentage terms. That to me meant, okay, this is really important to them. So I spent a lot of time looking at how do I make sure that my percentage average view is high. Then they started showing percentage still watching after 30 seconds. They started reporting that. It's like, okay, this means it's really, really important. So then I spent a lot of time thinking, okay, that's because they've obviously learned that a strong hook on a video is really important. So I spent a lot of time around that, how to get that number up. I also realized that they started showing you click-through rate, but they introduced click-through rate at the same time as they introduced the first 30 seconds. I realized that's their measure of clickbait. So, because if you've got some really clicky, baity title, but people are dropping after the first 30 seconds, that's their signal saying it's clickbait. So, whenever they change a measure or start suddenly showing a measure, I kind of try to figure out what is it. And that's how I use that to kind of evolve what I'm doing. And I think you're right. If they do something big like shorts and they're all over it, you've got to chase it. Like during the pandemic, for example, I could see that lives were really important because it gives people that time both to do them and to watch them. And so that's when I started launching lives, because it was clear that they were pushing out prioritizing the algorithm was pushing up lives much more. So you just need to be nimble like that.
That's good stuff right there. If you're a YouTube creator and you're looking into your YouTube, your studio, and you see a lot of times you'll pop up, there'll be a new metric. If that new metric is there, that's a great indicator that that's something that they've realized recently is a little bit more important to the overall YouTube experience for the viewer, and to kind of, I guess, gravitate your content in that direction that's favorable to that particular metric might be a pretty good practice, is what you're saying, right?
Exactly, because that's an indicator it's important.
Yep.
So I'm always looking out for what do they change, what's new, and one of the ways, as a little tip, sorry, if there are creators interested, is YouTube actually have a channel which is called YouTube Creators, where every week they bring out it's a short video, it's like 3 minutes maybe, sometimes 4 minutes at most, where they talk about what they're doing and what they're testing and what's being launched. That's a good way of also keeping up to date. You know, it's literally once a week, every Tuesday, a video comes out, so that's an easy way, you know, of being kind of warned stuff's coming or things are happening.
Awesome stuff. All right, I got one more. You answered halfway on this already. You talked about some cruise ships that you had on the horizon. Mine was a general question. Basically, you know, we talked about the channel and where do you want the channel to go. But as far as your cruise bucket list, some things out there for the guy who's done most of, if not all of it, when it comes to cruising, is there anything left on your list that you want to make sure you get a chance to do besides, you know, seeing some of the newer ships that you mentioned before?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I actually have a list that I started years and years ago, and I thought the list would get shorter, but it never does, because, you know, you go on a cruise and someone will say, have you done X or Y or whatever. So I do have the things that I haven't really done is, because also I quite cover quite a lot of river cruising. So the Mississippi is one that I really want to do, although lots of people in the US tell me that I'll find it really dull, but I'm really excited about the Mississippi. Hawaii, I've never really explored Hawaii, and the Great Lakes, for example. So those particularly in kind of are new places that I've never been to. Then I want to do more expedition stuff, the Northeast Passage, the Northwest Passage, Kimberley in Australia. So I want to do some of those sort of more really out of the way places, but I find I still keep coming back to, you know, when I look at what I've booked, there's still so much to see in Europe because, you know, there's new ports coming along. You know, I love going to the Caribbean, particularly when it's winter here. So those are the key places, you know, places that I have been to. And I would like to, now that Asia's opening up again, I would like to do more of Asia. I've done some cruising in Asia, but I did it more when I wasn't really, I was doing more podcasting than video, so I really want to go back and cover that, because I think, also thinking ahead, I think, you know, more people are starting to look at cruising those kind of territories again, so I think that's an opportunity for the channel as well.
Right. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to Gary Bembridge, and he has his YouTube channel, which I'm sure most of you know about already, Tips for Travelers. You also do, like you mentioned, you do have a podcast, and then you also have a website, right?
I do, yes, yeah, which is also Tips for Travelers. And always, Travelers is UK spelling with two L's.
Okay, that's big right there. Travelers with two L's, awesome. Gary, yeah. I want to thank you for spending a couple of minutes with us today. We really appreciated having you on.
Great.